From Bloomsburg to Erie, Harrisburg to Johnstown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, statistics show the U.S. economy is improving, but the fall 2024 Keystone Business Climate Survey found those who actually run businesses say conditions are getting worse. Greg Moreland from the National Federation of Independent Business joins us for a discussion. Scams and cybercrime are a concern for everyone who uses electronics, which is to say almost all of us. Joe Geiger has Daniel Diaz from USAA in the Community Benefit Spotlight to talk about how to protect yourself. And attention is focused on the presidential race, but Keystone State voters will also be electing a U.S. Senator next month. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania looks at their respective records on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Greg Moreland from the National Federation of Independent Business in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. In what will be an unusual spectacle, even for state government, Revenue Secretary Pat Brown appears headed for questioning before the full state Senate to explain his refusal to comply with a Senate subpoena of tax records related to an Allentown revitalization program. Brown had asked Commonwealth Court to block his appearance, but the court refused. The Senate passed a resolution compelling Brown to testify or be sent to Dauphin County Prison until he produces the requested tax documents. At issue is the Allentown Improvement Zone, which Brown created when he was himself a state senator representing Allentown. Questions have arisen as to the administration of that fund. The Cato Institute is out with its 17th fiscal report card on the nation's governors. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro was awarded a D for his stewardship of state finances. Governors who restrained spending and kept taxes down received a higher grade. While Pennsylvania has not raised taxes, there have been massive spending increases, creating a substantial structural budget deficit that will hit taxpayers hard in a few years. Shapiro has also supported the Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which would in effect be a massive tax hike on energy generators and consumers. Shapiro has also proposed a new tax on gaming machines. His tax proposals, however, have been squashed by Republicans who control the state Senate. The deadline to register to vote in the upcoming November general election is Monday, October 21st. Republicans might be sad to see the registration deadline pass. As of this past week, the GOP has cut the one-time 1.1 million Democrat voter registration edge in the state down to just 313,000 voters. So far this year, 61,000 Democrats have changed their party affiliation to Republican, while 25,000 Republicans have switched to the Democrat Party. The GOP has sliced the Democrat voter registration edge more than in half since the 2020 presidential election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The rate of inflation has dropped, the jobs market is strong, and interest rates have been cut. All are signs of an improving economy. But businesses in Penns Woods are not feeling the vibe. Greg Moreland is state director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. He is here to discuss results of the Lincoln Institute's Fall 2024 Keystone Business Climate Survey. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, there has been a lot of economic news in recent weeks, most of it positive. And if you look at official government statistics, you would assume that the business climate in Pennsylvania is improving markedly. But as we did the 2024 Keystone Business Climate Survey, and our audience, keep in mind, this is a survey of the owners, the chief executive officers, or top managers of businesses. These are the people who are actually engaged in business efforts in Pennsylvania. It appears that this group, Greg, is even less optimistic about the last few months and where we're going than they were before. Do you see that as well?
We do. That is something that we're hearing from our small businesses. Inflation has been crushing them since the pandemic. It continues to be a big issue for many of our businesses. We thought that we were going to see inflation kind of fall off a little bit, but I think the results of the study here kind of indicate what the small business owners and folks working there are feeling, and that inflation has continued. It has not gone away, and it has caused some concern over, you know, future economic conditions and whether or not their companies are going to be able to sustain throughout this time period. I think what we've seen at NFIB is that our small business owners are experiencing a price peak, right? They can't continue to raise prices on their consumers because their consumers will go elsewhere. And so they're having a real hard time determining when to raise prices and when not to, because they still need to remain competitive. And of course, the larger the business, you have more economies of scale. And so you have more ability to kind of shift some losses. Well, with the small business community, it's a lot less capable of making that shift because the businesses are just so incredibly small.
They are small, and we have found in the survey that a number of businesses have raised their prices. They've done everything they can in order to remain competitive, but as you've pointed out, you can only raise prices so far.
You stop at your local coffee shop on your way into work every morning and you get a coffee. And that's great, and it works for you because it's $3.50 or $4, right? Well, what happens when that coffee then becomes $5.50 or $6 or $7.50, $8, right? At some point, the consumer says, this is too much. I'm out. I'm going to make my coffee at home. And then that business doesn't get the revenue, right? And so our business owners are having a hard time between finding that happy middle ground between their bottom line and being a successful business that can keep the lights on, pay their employees a fair wage and an appropriate compensation package, but also make a profit at the end of the day. They're being squeezed from many angles, quite honestly.
I was somewhat surprised by the results of this survey, and Greg, I'm rarely surprised because we do keep our fingers on the pulse of what's happening in the business community. But every survey we do, and we do the Keystone Business Climate Survey twice a year, spring and fall. We've been doing it now for almost 30 years. And every one of those surveys, we have asked the question of the business owners, CEOs, managers who we survey, do you think business conditions in Pennsylvania are better, the same, or worse than they were 6 months ago? This time around, 45% said business conditions have gotten worse over the past 6 months. Are you seeing that as well? Because government statistics would seem to indicate otherwise.
We are seeing that our owners are quite pessimistic over the future conditions of the economy. I think the absolute unknown at the federal level of where our country is headed regarding who our next president is going to be. I think that the ineptitude of Congress in their ability to pass intelligent reforms to make sure that they're saving some of the tax provisions and tax cuts that were in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. You know, many of these provisions expire at the end of 2025. Mainly the 20% small business tax deduction. And so I think our owners are looking at the future and building out their models out 3 years and saying, boy, we really don't know what the future brings, because I think there are just two drastically different views of the fundamental role of government coming out of both of our major political parties. And one thing that our businesses operate on is certainty. And right now, it's certainly uncertain times.
It's very uncertain. You mentioned the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. If you listen to Democrat messaging, that was a tax cut that predominantly gave away taxpayer revenues, supposedly, to wealthy individuals, to large businesses. But small businesses also benefited from that, in addition to just regular tax-paying individuals. Our survey did show here, Greg, that concern over future economic conditions rated right up there with inflation. Do you see concern over the future of those tax cuts as being a major issue for small businesses?
Absolutely. It's our number one issue at the federal level for NFIB. We have started actively working this issue some time ago in this calendar year, and we're going to continue working that that throughout 2025 on behalf of our members. NFIB was a supporter of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, but only after they added in that 20% small business tax deduction, because NFIB felt that the original bill would have simply put our small business out of alignment in competitiveness with our large businesses and corporations here in the United States. And so with that 20% small business tax deduction, it helped out thousands and thousands of small businesses. And quite frankly, if we don't see that made permanent, all of our small businesses that are claiming that 20% are going to see a major tax increase, which is going to negatively affect their bottom line. And I think that's where you're seeing some of that uncertainty come from.
We are talking with Greg Moreland, who is State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business for Pennsylvania. And one key note about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is that despite the cut in rates, tax revenue actually went up significantly. And that's happened before. We had Ronald Reagan, we had John Kennedy going all the way back to the Calvin Coolidge administration. You cut rates, revenue goes up because you get more economic activity. So taking a look now at this, we see inflation as the biggest concern, cumulative over 20% inflation weighing on businesses. But there has been some improvement in some areas. I see supply chain disruptions seem to have dropped considerably.
We are seeing fewer complaints regarding supply chain disruptions. I think there are certain industries, you know, that are affected at different times, and maybe it's cyclical or a natural disaster. I think right now we're seeing supply chain shortages and expectations of supply chain shortages in the medical field due to some of the hurricanes that had recently come through. There is some mining operations in North Carolina, you know, but I think these are more of the scarce random event more so than large scale industry wide supply chain operations. I think it's more limited at this time to specific items.
In past surveys last spring, last year, finding qualified and keeping qualified employees rated as a very high, almost higher than inflation at that point in time. We're still seeing about a third of the businesses here, Greg, who are saying that getting and keeping qualified employees continues to be a problem. Are you seeing that with your members?
It has gotten slightly better since the outset of the pandemic, but it has still remained a top issue for our folks. They're simply not getting the folks that are skilled, that are qualified. They may get some folks to apply, but those folks don't necessarily meet the qualifications for the jobs. They've done nearly every single thing they possibly can do by raising introductory compensation rates, extending healthcare benefits, a 401k. They're really trying to be competitive, but it has been difficult in locating that qualified employee.
It is costing businesses more to be able to bring employees in, because with a shortage of employees and a surplus of jobs, the labor market is much more competitive. Taking a look, Greg, at what is causing higher costs, where the businesses are experiencing higher costs, it seems like materials and supplies is showing up as the number one problem.
It is. I will tell a story, a personal story. And I met with a business owner, the Pugliese brothers. They owned a sausage shop here right in Harrisburg, right off of Progress Avenue. And they'd been in business about 10 years. Their shipping containers had quadrupled over the last 4 years. The price of the olive oil that they used was specialty from Italy. And it just had raised to a price point that was so unimaginable that they could not make the quality product that they had been making for 10 years for the community. And the recipe has been in their family for over 200 years, and they were bringing this product to market. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they're having to close their business now because many of the materials and supplies have just, the costs have gone through the roof. And not to mention as well, rent, I know, is a big issue for the respondents to this survey, and their rent had traditionally increased by 3% every year. And that's expected as a business owner. Mm-hmm. Okay, keeping with the price of inflation, acceptable. Mm-hmm. But their landlord wanted to raise it 60% in 1 year.
And all of this with the 2024 Keystone Business Climate Survey, driving a lot of concerns and negative perceptions about the business climate here in Pennsylvania. We have been talking with Greg Moreland, who is state director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Greg, tell us a bit about NFIB. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
Yeah, NFIB, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We've been around for about 81 years now, founded in 1943. And so we represent the small business owner. Our average member has about 10 employees. And so we truly represent the small of the small business owner. You can find a lot more information about us at nfib.com. We do have a Pennsylvania specific page there. We also have the federal page where you can take a look at the resources, action alerts, and the legislation that we're supporting and opposing. We hope you take a look at nfib.com.
Greg Moreland, State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Greg, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lemon.
And you can find complete numeric results of the 2024 Keystone Business Climate Survey at lincolninstitute.org. Protecting yourself from scams and cybercrime is a growing concern. Daniel Diaz is a cybersecurity expert with USAA. He joins Joe Geiger now in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Daniel, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Daniel's a fraud and cybersecurity expert for USAA. Daniel, there's a lot of cybersecurity risk and exposure out there, and some of it is done so well that it's easy to fall into the trap. Who are the most vulnerable people out there? And then we'll talk about some of the schemes.
So, Joe, you've hit on a very important theme there. For any listener out there, if you see a button, whether it's here on an email or a text, and you're even having doubts or second thoughts about clicking it, don't. Chances are it could be a scammer, and you don't want to go and expose yourself to that. We can go into some of the tips and some of the things to look for, but to answer your question directly about groups of people that are more vulnerable. So scammers and criminals are indiscriminate with who they choose. As you've noted, they're targeting people from all walks of life. Myself, I get, a number of different texts and emails per week from people that I don't know. Sometimes they actually look and feel like they're from my trusted institution. And a lot of my colleagues, a lot of friends, everyone I know, this is happening too. But in particular, there are two sets of consumers that we're seeing that criminals are especially targeting. The first is the elder segment, and a couple of things there. So there's a lot of technology being thrown at us, and our senior citizens may not be as up to date with various forms of peer-to-peer payments, social media, text, emails, etc. So things can already feel overwhelming to them, or they may not have the right education and resources to be able to know how to engage. So criminals will likely go after them there. The second reason that people are targeting the elder community is that they tend to have more. They have their life savings, they have their 401ks, potentially a property or two. More to lose, more to gain. So that's part of the reason why criminals are targeting them. But you have the other end of the spectrum as well, where you're looking at teenagers, Gen Z, Gen Y, a lot of people that live more of their lives digitally. And so just are quick to trust someone that they've never met before because that's how they do a lot of their digital interaction. So that's something where parents should potentially keep a closer eye on how and where their kids engage. And hopefully, if something happens, learn early, learn quick so that the issue isn't a repeated. Scammers will try to play to our emotions. And they'll also get at us with putting in a false sense of urgency. They tell us that here's an opportunity that is a limited time offer, something that is potentially too good to be true. And, our guidance is that if it's too good to be true, it probably is. No deal, no action is worth not taking a step back, taking a breath, and assessing the situation and asking friends or family for help.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio program today. My guest is Daniel Diaz. He's a fraud and cybersecurity expert for USAA. You have a program, I believe, with the acronym STOP. You want to share what that involves?
STOP is a piece of guidance that we offer in terms of how to better prepare and how to better detect and take the time and space that you might need to see if an opportunity is real or fraudulent. So STOP is stay cautious, take your time, only trust verified sources, and prioritize protecting your info.
If you didn't resist, if you become victimized, what are some steps that you can take as a victim of a financial scheme? In 2023, the FBI reported that Americans lost in excess of $12 billion. If you're victimized by a financial scheme, what steps are available to you to remedy that?
Well, the first thing to do if you believe that you've been the victim of a scam is call your bank immediately. The earlier that we know, the more that we can do to help. If you gave away any of your information or you believe your login credentials are compromised, be sure you change the passcodes right away.
If you have any suspicion at all, better be safe than sorry and reach out and look for help. What do you want people to know about what you do and the organization that you work for, USAA, in this regard?
The one thing that I want to relay to listeners is that fraud prevention works best when it's done collaboratively, when it's done with consumers and institutions, because, again, criminals are coming at every angle. So part of the work that we do is to empower consumers to be able to fight fraud.
What a grill it is to get through the remedies for coming out of being victimized. It's not going to be an easy trek, is it?
We always talk about the financial losses of fraud, right, which, again, you know, keep growing each year. Last year, as you said, $12 billion, 40% increase over the prior year. But then the thing that we don't talk about as often is the emotional toll that this can have on victims, right? You know, one feels it definitely impacts people's sense of safety, a lot of trust, fear. And so this is what we try to emphasize when it comes to the importance of cyber security. It isn't just about protecting your money or protecting your personal information. It's about protecting your own personal well-being. I do want to emphasize that we do serve far more than just military, a lot of military families and relatives. And, you know, we thank every one of our members for trusting us. But again, this is a fight that every consumer is fighting, every company is fighting, and we're all doing it together. For consumers that aren't USA members, we do offer a wide range of education and information. You can learn more at usaa.com/scams. But like I said, you know, there are a number of different resources out there from the FTC, the FBI, other banks. Again, we're all working together so that no one should feel alone in fighting fraud.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Daniel Diaz. He's a fraud and cybersecurity expert for USAA. Daniel, this has been a very valuable interview for the people listening to the program. I appreciate your time and thank you for what you do for us.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the time. I know that fraud can be a difficult subject, but again, the good news is that there are things everyone can do to help fight against fraud.
Back to you, Loman.
Voters will choose between Robert P. Casey Jr. and David McCormick to serve as a U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania for the next 6 years. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania looks into their records on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The countdown is on as Pennsylvanians and the nation prepare to cast their ballots in what appears to be the most consequential election in history. As you recall, conservative and liberal policy ideas used to be two different paths to achieve one goal, ideas that allowed for discussion and compromise and led to positive impacts for the public good. However, in our ever-divided political climate, we have found ourselves viewing two completely opposite policy stances that take the nation in two completely different directions. Getting out to vote is as important as ever, as all the races from the top of the ticket down are going to be close. In a state like Pennsylvania, your vote may be the deciding factor. Most notably, there's a stark contrast of policy differences between two candidates on the ballot who are in a must-win race for control of the Senate. Despite endless commercials and mail pieces flooding your mailboxes, pollsters suggest that there's still roughly 8% of Pennsylvanians who have not made up their minds in the race between conservative Dave McCormick and progressive incumbent Bob Casey. Dave McCormick comes from a business background, having served as the CEO of Bridgewater Associates, was a member of former President Trump's Defense Advisory Board, and served in the George W. Bush administration as Undersecretary of the Treasury for International Affairs. In the latter role, he served the country as the head international economic diplomat. Mr. McCormick also attended West Point, served our country, and holds the honorable title of Bronze Star recipient. Incumbent Bob Casey has continued on the path of his father, Bob Casey Sr., in an attempt to create a Kennedy-like dynasty in the Commonwealth. He is listed as an attorney by trade and served as Auditor General and State Treasurer in Pennsylvania, with a failed run for governor in 2002. On the issues, Casey serves on the Senate Committee on Finance. Casey's publicly stated plan to reduce record-high inflation is to create legislation that would go after companies for charging what he believes is, quote, too much for goods and services. He carries a voting record of supporting $5.5 trillion in new spending since 2021 and has yet to address the real reasons behind permanently high prices for goods and services. Dave McCormick, who has spent years in the financial industry, has confidently stated his position to rein in federal spending in an effort to reduce inflation. Mr. McCormick has also expressed his opposition to tax increases and has expressed his support for expanding former President Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions, which allow Pennsylvanians to keep more of their hard-earned money in their pockets. A hot topic that is on the minds of many throughout the nation is the southern border. Here we find a distinct difference between the two candidates. Senator Casey has supported the Biden-Harris administration's immigration policies over the last 4 years. On the contrary, Dave McCormick has expressed the need for new leadership in Washington when it comes to immigration policy and border security. We must ensure that U.S. Border Patrol agents have the resources they need to protect our citizens from the threat of deadly fentanyl, while also providing opportunities for the most deserving individuals to live out their American dream. Perhaps the biggest difference between the two candidates is their stance on Pennsylvania's greatest resource, our energy industry. Senator Casey has stated that he wants to increase renewable energy to address what he terms the, quote, climate crisis. His plan calls for more federal dollars to be invested in green energy and has stated a position in which he supports more regulation on natural gas extraction. In addition, he has promoted $4.5 million in solar grants that will benefit 20 farms and has been a vocal supporter of President Biden's multi-trillion dollar infrastructure plan to accelerate green energy. Senator Casey has also championed cap and tax policies to curb the use of traditional fuels. Mr. McCormick has argued that the energy sector is not just a matter of economics, but of national security. His position is to extract more natural gas and continue the production of traditional fossil fuels. Furthermore, he has taken a market-driven approach to what sources should be used for consumption by the public. In short, the two gentlemen have different ideas, one being government-driven and one consumer-driven. As you go to cast your ballots on November 5th, particularly if you are one of those roughly 8% of undecided voters, take a look at the policy stances behind each candidate. We can get this Commonwealth and country back on track. With the right leadership, the American people will achieve prosperity in the 119th Congress. Join our team at Americans for Prosperity Action to learn more and to talk with your neighbors about this critical election on November 5th. This is Emily Green, Senior Advisor with Americans for Prosperity Action.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WTYM-AM in Katanning, WLSH-AM in Lansford, along with 5DRadio.com in Fraser, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.